This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. If you had any doubt that America was at war, at least a war of ideas, throughout the 1990s, all you had to do was visit a bookstore. Culture Wars, the struggle to define America. Culture War in America, a society in chaos. Dispatches from the Culture Wars. Notes from the Culture Wars. Beyond Culture Wars. Just as some of the titles that documented the political struggle over ideas and values. The battlegrounds included the media, the schools, and the courts. The issues? Affirmative action, gay rights, abortion, medical marijuana, and religion in education and public places. So, where are we now? A string of Supreme Court decisions on sodomy laws, affirmative action, and school prayer have led some to declare liberals the winners, at least in the courts. Conservatives haven't lost all the battles, though, the death penalty, for example, and they say they've gained a greater voice in the media, that they're winning over many young people, and they point out that Republicans control the White House and both chambers of Congress. A little bit later in the program, we'll hear about a posthumous pardon granted today to comedian Lenny Bruce, and we'll talk about new statistics that show another drop in teen pregnancy rates. What does this tell us about the choices teens are making about sex and why they're making them? But first, an update on the culture wars. Which of these issues matter to you? Which side do you think is winning and why? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address, TOTN@NPR.org. We'll begin on the legal front, and joining us first from his home here in Washington is Jeffrey Rosen, legal affairs editor at the New Republic and the author of The Naked Crowd, Reclaiming Security and Freedom in an Anxious Age. And Jeffrey, always nice to have you on the program.
Very nice to be here.
Define our terms. What do we mean when we're saying culture wars?
James Davison Hunter, in one of the books from the 90s that you mentioned, called appropriately enough Culture Wars, had a nice definition. He talked about the battle between two conceptions of morality. One camp he called the Orthodox, who believed in transcendent and traditional hierarchical sources of authority, and the other camp, which he called the Progressives, believed in individual choice and individual autonomy as the keystone of morality. As Hunter described it, this battle, which began to heat up in the 60s and 70s, fueled by the expansion of higher education, by the expansion of gender equality, by the women's movement, was one where the Orthodox side was struggling to win almost from the very beginning. And by the 80s and 90s, with the expansion of global media, increasingly permissive sexual ethos and so forth, he said it may be that the Orthodox side will be unable to offer any alternative to the worldview that currently plagues them. They may have a couple of court battles that will energize them, like Roe v. Wade, like Lawrence versus Texas, that will give their supporters a false sense of hope. But essentially, the overwhelmingly individualistic nature of modern society will leave the Orthodox side in the dust. And that's why it's so fascinating, isn't it, that just last July alone, the Supreme Court, by ruling against the conservatives, as you said, in affirmative action and the sodomy cases, following up on similar defeats in the graduation prayer and first-term abortion cases, led many social conservatives to declare that the culture wars were over and they had decisively lost.
Well, we'll hear from a conservative later in the program who will take issue with that thought, but certainly in the courts, you seem to be right. Why do you think so?
The courts follow public opinion rather than challenging it. We have this image of the Supreme Court and the courts in general as heroic checks on the power of the majority, but just descriptively, the courts really have tended to follow the polls. And on all the issues that we're talking about, early-term abortion, whether you can do what you like in the privacy of your bedroom, even graduation prayer, an increasingly individualistic majority of the country is siding with the progressives. So in that sense, the court is just ratifying what the public thinks rather than leading. But there are important exceptions, and the two most important are abortion and gay marriage. It was really abortion, Roe v. Wade in 73, that galvanized the social conservatives for a generation, that led to the creation of a series of interest groups that were dedicated to appoint judges who would reverse their defeats, and really, joined by liberal interest groups, have distorted our judicial politics, giving a false sense that the public was more in play than it was, because on abortion, the polls have been remarkably consistent. For the past 30 years, majorities have opposed restrictions on early-term abortions, but supported restrictions on late-term abortion, like partial birth abortion. So Roe gave the social conservatives a temporary boost, but it was really a distraction from the fact that they'd lost the essential battle. And gay marriage is, of course, the next great drama, and who knows how that will play out, but the polls there are very interesting as well.
Another issue that might have been lumped into the issues on culture wars, the death penalty, certainly the conservatives seem to have won out on that.
They did, although the fissures on the death penalty are interesting. There are some social conservatives, in particular traditional Catholics, who oppose the death penalty, just as they oppose abortion. But you're certainly right that the majority of the public in America has supported the death penalty consistently, and the courts, with the exception of a minor blip in the 1970s, have tended to ratify that understanding and have let the death penalty proceed.
It's easy to extrapolate from what you call the progressives and the what was the other term you used?
The Orthodox,
and say that translates to Democrats and Republicans, but it's not quite congruent, is it?
It's not at all. And it's, so how is it possible, as you suggested in the introduction, that at a time when the Democrats, the progressives have won the culture wars, the Republicans are in control of all three branches of government? And it may be because on the issues that matter, President Bush has really disappointed social conservatives much more than he's vindicated them. Karl Rove has a maxim, I understand, that Bush should go as far to the right as possible without alienating the middle. And when you think about the great culture war issues in the Bush administration, stem cell research, restrictions on early term abortion, even the resurrection of school prayer and charitable choice, which allow religious organizations to receive government funds, on all of these issues, Bush has either been absent or disappointed the social conservatives. And that's what makes gay marriage so interesting. Of course, here the politics couldn't be better for the Republicans. Bush can talk vaguely of the need for an amendment without pushing it hard. As long as marriage isn't actually recognized in Massachusetts, there'll be no immediate need or pressure for the amendment. But the Democrats will be in the worst of all positions, as they're forced to choose between alienating their base, which demands marriage, and the moderate majority, which doesn't.
Our telephone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And David's on the line with us from Chicago, Illinois.
Hi. I guess my question is around the gay marriage, gay rights issue. The Supreme Court and state courts have typically been ruling for gay rights and for gay marriage, at least in Massachusetts, and it appears that it could head that way in the U.S. Supreme Court. I guess my question is, what are the options that are really open to Congress and the states to block this? Because it appears, you know, it seems to me, based on the Republican philosophy of, you know, local control and states' rights, that's a very anti-Republican approach to try to block that.
It is indeed, and you note a really important irony, and there are plenty of principled libertarian conservatives who oppose the amendment for precisely that reason, in addition to the fact that some libertarian conservatives actually support gay marriage. But the options for Congress and the states depend on what actually plays out in Massachusetts. If civil unions are recognized as a compromise, then the issue may not be forced, because we have a federal law in the books that allows for states to refuse to recognize marriages from other states that are against their public policy. But if Massachusetts does actually recognize marriage and the Defense of Marriage Act is upheld, then ultimately only a constitutional amendment could be invoked. And as we know, those are extremely hard to pass. They require 3/4 of the states. Only 13 states have to say no. And that's why many people don't really expect things to get that far.
David, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And Jeffrey Rosen, thank you for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me, Neil.
Jeffrey Rosen is an associate professor at George Washington Law School and legal affairs editor for The New Republic. And joining us now from his office in Virginia is Paul Weyrich. He's CEO of Free Congress Foundation and was a founding influence on the Moral Majority Movement. And Mr. Weyrich, nice to talk to you again.
Indeed.
Mr. Weyrich, in 1999, you announced that there no longer was a moral majority. Why did you say that?
Well, because had there been a moral majority, Bill Clinton clearly would have been convicted.
On his impeachment charges.
Yes, of his impeachment charges. No question about it. And the fact that we couldn't even get 50 votes for any of the charges was a clear indication that from the standpoint of the United States Senate, they could care less about morality.
There are other issues that were crucially important to the moral majority, as we heard from Jeffrey Rosen a moment ago. There's been relatively little movement on the question of abortion.
Well, the only movement has been a partial birth abortion. The public has begun to change somewhat on abortion, and particularly the younger upcoming voters have changed considerably. But whether or not that'll translate into public policy, I sort of doubt it. And I doubt it because the will does not exist among the Republicans or, you know, anybody for that matter that is in the legislative process to really push these issues. They don't want to push them. They run away from them. And, you know, just electing more Republicans is not going to solve the culture war. I have recommended an alternative strategy, and that is what the homeschoolers have done. They have sort of taken an independent course, and I think that on a whole variety of issues, including entertainment, that conservatives are going to have to do the same thing, because clearly we are losing and losing big when it comes to the coursing of society and the whole degradation of any kind of morality.
Do you are you disappointed with politicians or with their constituents for failing to push them on this issue?
Well, politicians are reflective of their constituents to a certain degree. You know, if the politicians would show more leadership, you probably would have a lot of people going along with it. So, ultimately, the politicians are more responsible than the constituency, but the constituency itself is a big problem because, you know, let's look at how many people are into internet pornography today. You know, how many people think that living together before marriage is perfectly fine? How many people think that homosexual relationships are you know, perfectly appropriate, and so on and so on? The traditional mores that we have had in this country have really broken down.
Do you look forward to the fight over the issue of gay marriage, or fear that that will be another, from your point of view, a debacle?
I think it's going to be a debacle because we can't seem to get together and agree on what it is we're looking for. There are people who want what is legislatively impossible and who will not accept anything but that, and who are saying they will actively oppose anybody that that advocates something less. And so I don't see where, in order to win, we'd all have to be 100% united. And at this stage, we're definitely not.
Obviously, you're not willing to give up the struggle.
Oh, no. We never give up the struggle. And, you know, for example, all of the debate for the last several years over partial birth abortion has greatly aided the pro-life cause. Lots and lots of people have come over to the pro-life side because that was an issue. I mean, the irony is that, you know, Bill Clinton vetoed that bill twice, and yet in doing so, he created a lot more pro-life sentiment than had he just signed the bill you know, the courts already have declared it unconstitutional anyway, or at least put a stay on its implementation. So, you know, it's a great irony in what he did to supposedly support the pro-abortion cause.
Paul Weyrich, thank you for your time today.
You bet.
Paul Weyrich is the CEO of the Free Congress Foundation. When we come back from a short break, we'll be joined by a conservative who thinks conservatives are no longer losing the culture wars. 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about America's culture wars. Are there signs of who's winning and who's losing? If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Brian Anderson, a senior editor at City Journal, who's the author of a recently published article titled, We're Not Losing the Culture Wars Anymore. And Brian Anderson, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
My pleasure to be on. Thanks.
Who's the we in your article, and why are you no longer losing?
Well, the we is conservatives. Or conservatives and libertarians broadly, let's mm-hmm. say the right, and that's because the magazine the article was published in, City Journal, is a neoconservative magazine. The reason why I'm making this claim is what I argue is a very profound shift in mass communications over the last less than a decade, really, the last 5 or 6 years. You've had the emergence of cable television. You've had the rise of the Internet, and in particular the blogosphere, and a big, big shift in book publishing. All of these changes have benefited the right.
Now, when you talk about cable television, the thing that leaps most obviously to mind is Fox Television and Fox News and Bill O'Reilly and that whole phenomenon. But you also talk about some specific shows that may surprise some people, for example, South Park.
Yes, one of the arguments I'm making is that there's been a kind of cultural shift that's being given expression on, in particular, cable comedy shows like South Park or Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn, mm-hmm. which is also on Comedy Channel. The attitude of these expressed in these programs, you wouldn't call it conservative, but it's very much anti-liberal. Liberals are generally the main targets of the humor, and this is something you wouldn't normally see on network television. So on many issues, it in fact is allied with the right.
And for example, you say it in a way it follows on from The Simpsons, which is, well, it's not predictably liberal anyway.
No, that's right. There's a kind of anti-political correctness that these cartoons have. Shown. King of the Hill is another example, but South Park takes this farther than any other program so far.
And another example is the success in recent years of many conservative authors and publishing in general.
Absolutely. 10 years ago, the New York Times bestseller list would not be boasting 2 or 3 conservative bestsellers every week. Generally, that's been the case for the last couple of years, and you've had big publishers like Random House and Penguin decide to launch conservative publishing lines, or at least right-leaning publishing lines, over the last couple of years because these books are really selling. So an entire industry is springing up, which I think is putting conservative, or at least right, ideas right in the middle of the political debate in the country.
Let's get some more callers on the line, and this is Reggie, who joins us from St. Paul, Minnesota.
How you doing?
Okay.
Hey, when you talk about the culture wars, you know, it brings the image of 60s radicals or, you know, leftists versus rightists. But it seems to me like a lot today there's more of a notion that people are interested in making money, that free market and capitalism concerns are more important than political ideas. For instance, I know a lot of businessmen who have very liberal or very progressive ideas, but they're really more interested in anything making more money for themselves.
Social liberals and fiscal conservatives, Reggie?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you agree with that, Brian Anderson?
Yes, I think that describes a definite tendency within the electorate. I think the left's economic ideas, high taxation, nationalization of industries, these things have all kind of gone down in flames over the last 20 years. So you'll find a lot of people who would view themselves as liberals on social issues being pretty hardcore on free markets. Absolutely.
Reggie, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay. But how do you reconcile with Jeffrey Rosen's argument earlier in the program that the courts, in making their series of decisions on cultural issues, have basically been following public opinion?
Yeah, I would actually disagree with Mr. Rosen on that. I don't think the courts generally reflect widespread cultural attitudes, but rather the attitudes of elites who tend to be to the left of the population. I think this is certainly the case in issues like homosexuality, and it was the case with Roe v. Wade, which went far beyond what the prevailing attitudes were among most Americans at the time. As Mr. Wyrick had indicated, there's actually been a shift among younger people where, for example, a majority now of younger women are outright opposed to even early term abortions.
Yet,
so I think this is a pretty significant shift going on.
Yet those same polls show that young people are a little bit further along on the gay rights issue.
That's right. So you do have a very complex picture emerging of an electorate, a future electorate, that is going to be more conservative in some respects, but perhaps more liberal in others.
And you lump conservatives and libertarians together, yet libertarians, at least according to many cultural conservatives, have a number of apostasies. Many of them would support abortion rights, for example, decriminalization of drugs.
Oh, sure. This is the rights eternal problem, bringing these two very different groups together. And there are a variety of issues on which they agree, but there are others that tensions are pretty deep.
Let's get Mike on the line, and Mike is with us from Eielson Air Force Base in Alaska.
How you doing today, Neil?
All right. How are you?
Good, good.
You're a lot closer to Christmas than we are, Mike.
Yes, sir. We are.
Go ahead with your question.
Well, I don't really have a question as much as a comment, but I'm a Christian. I'm 28 years old, and I don't know if I would probably identify more ideologically with the conservatives or Republicans, but I tend to sway on a few issues, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But in reference to the culture wars, it's overwhelming almost. I really feel that in a sense that we are losing. You know, I look around, I look at media, I look at prevailing ideas, you know, relativism and all these things, and I see them pervading our culture, and I see it in people around me and ideas around me, and it's difficult to see how we are winning. But you know, and another comment I had was that I don't think it's so much, you know, we say culture war, we tend to view it as a war to win or lose, and I believe that, but I think that we may be fighting it the wrong way. You know, I'm not sure. I guess I'm not sure how to get involved or how to fight this war. You know, I see it as an issue more of right or wrong than an issue of winning or losing. And that was pretty much my comment.
Brian Anderson?
Sure. This is the problem of how to respond to events around you, how to be a citizen. You know, absolutely, a lot of popular entertainment, especially for conservative Christians, say, is pretty offensive. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, conservative Christians have a lot more opportunities to watch, say, on cable television, shows that didn't exist even 10 years ago.
Right. I mean, in Sky Angel, too, there's an exclusively Christian network out now by satellite, too.
Absolutely. So by increasing the number of choices, you can perhaps find those that at least reflect your values and your views a little more closely.
How may I better participate? I mean, you know, I see this stuff going on in the courts. I see it going on in Congress and all these places. And I guess as a citizen, like you said, you know, I'm anxious to do something, but I'm not sure.
Well, the courts are a huge problem, and one that's resisted reform. I think Professor Rosen would agree with me on this, that On some decisions, the court has overreached to such a degree that it has created a political backlash. This was true of Roe v. Wade, and you know, should the promotion through the courts of homosexual marriage, rather than this being the outcome of some kind of electoral process, should that go forward, this too could, I believe, cause a backlash.
Mike, we wanted to thank you for the call, but I couldn't help but hearing there was somebody in the background who may be even more excited about the approach of Christmas than we are. So,
my son. Thank you very much, Neil.
Okay, thanks very much for the call.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Here's an email question from Gene Floyd. Why does one side have to win? Why can we not live in the same country and not agree with everything?
Well, because, of course, there are fundamental differences on any number of issues. Which divide liberals and conservatives. And while we all do have to live together, and civility and respect are very important, to pretend these differences don't exist, I think, is just a false alternative.
The question of the internet, you point out in your article that there is, the blogocracy, as you call it, and
blogosphere.
The blogosphere. Excuse me, I missed your catchword there. But as we heard from Paul Weyrich, he fears that there's an awful lot of people on the internet using pornography, perhaps many more than are in the blogosphere. And one of your conservative colleagues, Jonah Goldberg, argued the picture was, the internet amounts to a guerrilla resistance to a liberal super army.
Well, I have a little difference with Jonah Goldberg on that question. I do think the effect of the blogosphere, the conservative websites, and news and opinion sites like Drudge Report is pretty profound and growing. This is increasingly keeping the left on its toes, and it's countering an ongoing and age-old conservative complaint of liberal bias in the mainstream media. Sites like Andrew Sullivan or Mickey Kouse are just doing a tremendous job of enlightening the public about how the news is being tailored in a certain way that conforms with liberal ends. I think some of the mainstream media is starting to listen to this. And I think over time you'll see the influence of the internet grow and grow, particularly because so many younger people are very much internet savvy.
One more caller on this. Let's get Michael on the line from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hello?
Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi, Neil. Happy holidays, sir.
Same to you.
I don't know if you can really call this a question or a statement. Do you believe that you can legislate morality?
Well, I think you can't not legislate morality. Every single law takes a moral position on any number of issues, whatever the law is. So I think it's actually the case that you cannot not legislate morality.
Why do you think your article's gotten a great deal of response? What nerve do you think you hit?
Well, I think for conservatives, they've so long heard, or at least those on the right, they've so long heard this ongoing story of liberal bias in the media and that we are losing the culture wars. But a lot of people are sensing that something has shifted over the last 4 or 5 years, and it's borne out in the election results, particularly in 2002. Something shifting. And I think I gave a kind of analytical framework which allowed people to understand that. And also to understand why there's been so much anger on the part of the left in the last several years. Which is propelling liberal books right up the bestseller list as well.
Conservative anger drove up a lot of their books on this bestseller list, too.
That's right. That's right. But I think it was the sense that, maybe things aren't quite as bad as we had thought and that there's an enormous opportunity here. And if you look at the analysis of the last midterm elections in 2002, the exit polls have finally been released, and there's been a big shift. Those who self-identify as conservatives have increased from 30% to 34%, and those who identify as liberals have dropped to the lowest percentage, 17%, in almost 25 years.
Brian Anderson, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Brian Anderson, senior editor of City Journal. He joined us from his office in New York. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.